Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Football Garbage Time Podcast, Week 14 edition, where we'll cover some highlights from Week 14 of the NFL. My name is Hakun Wong, and I'm the editor-in-chief of footballgarbagetime.com, and with me is senior writer Ryan Whitfield. How you doing, Ryan?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
Not too bad. So tell me, truthfully, have you stopped celebrating the fact that Gronk is back yet? I'm assuming that Gronkowski Day is an official holiday in Boston where everyone gives thanks that his knee is okay. So you guys done celebrating yet?
definitely good to see that he's all right. I 4 minutes left in the game that you're up 21 points and throwing team routes to him is a little foolish, but that's been fine not seeing him until the postseason, honestly. But, you know, as far as the overall sense that it shows that he'll be okay long-term is definitely a positive sign here.
Right, right. I can imagine that people are pretty excited to see him back so quickly. I have to ask you, last time I was in Boston, a while ago when I was in Boston, I saw that Gronkowski had his own cereal. He had Gronk Flakes. Have you ever seen those before?
I have, yeah. I've never tried them, but they're around.
Okay. Well, I can tell you this. They're not so good. So Gronk can do many things, including help his team go to the Super Bowl. He certainly cannot do cereal. So one thing he can't do. It's hard to find, but there you go. So anyway, shout out again this week to Wally and Ray at Urban Sports Scene in the DMV. As you all know, we're going heads up with them each week on NFL picks, and we tied this week 10-6. So we'll need to pick it up in Week 15. In the meantime, tune in to Urban Sports Scene on podbean.com. They are terrific. Definitely give them a listen. Okay, Ryan, let's get to the topics for today. So, first of all, we only have 3 weeks left in the NFL season, which means playoffs are just around the corner. The wild card picture is starting to clear up now. So let's take a look at that. Tell me, what's the team on the NFC and the AFC that you think has the most potential as a wild card team to get to the Super Bowl?
Yeah, on the NFC side, I think the scariest thing for everybody, it's one of those things that people needed to take advantage early when they had to, when they had the opportunity to put the Seahawks away.
Yep.
You know, we talked about them a lot early in the season, and you know they're now on a 4-game win streak. Obviously, a team that's been there and done that before. So from the NFC side, I don't know how you're more fearful of any other team but them. I think Jimmy Graham going down was a blessing. I don't really understand why they signed him, traded for him in the first place. He doesn't fit their identity. He can't block. He's basically just a big, giant, soft receiver. And considering they destroyed the Broncos a couple years ago in the Super Bowl, because when you play a finesse-type offense or finesse-type skill players like that, you can shut them down. You would think that they would know firsthand that that's not the kind of player they wanted. So I think that actually has helped them and freed them up a little bit. And Doug Baldwin's been reaping the benefits the last couple weeks. So it'll be interesting to see what they do now, given the fact that they are kind of a run-first team with the injuries they have at running back. Overall, I'm not a big believer in the running back position in the NFL anyway. So,
right.
So I'd say the Seahawks on the NFC side. And then on the AFC side, speaking from a personal perspective, there's no scarier team than the Pittsburgh Steelers. Even as middling as their defense is, when you have that many weapons on offense, it's a pretty scary thing. And when you have a quarterback who's a 2-time Super Bowl winner, who's been there 3 times, you have to respect what they can do, even if Mike Tomlin is one of the biggest boob head coaches in the NFL. So I would say the Steelers, but that also rests on the fact that, you know, if they actually end up staying a wild card team with Dalton down, they could potentially catch the Bengals. And with Dalton down and again, probably one of the coaches I respect even less than Tomlin, Marvin Lewis leading that team, anything's possible there down the stretch.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me just say, I totally agree with your NFC pick. The Seattle Seahawks, they won't catch the Cardinals, and they are actually just otherworldly right now. Other teams had the opportunity to knock them out early in the season, as you mentioned. They didn't do that. Russell Wilson has been unbelievable in their 4-game win streak. Absolutely unbelievable. He's thrown for a combined 16 touchdowns in 4 games. He has a completion percentage combined of over 75%. And a QBR rating over 90 each and every week. He is just blowing the roof off right now in Seattle, really demonstrating some growth here, because he has come a long way from 2 years ago when he was more of a game manager to being a really solid pocket passer. I mean, this is not a guy who's just relying on his legs. He is extending plays, but he's finding receivers downfield. And Doug Baldwin, well, let's face it, he's not a great talent, but he's making him really relevant. And, you know, I do
don't
think
tell
that,
him that
it's interesting. Yeah, right. I won't tell him that directly. But Marshawn Lynch, you know, I really thought that the Seahawks were kind of dependent on Marshawn Lynch in the past. I don't think they are anymore. Thomas Rawls was a nice find, but frankly, as bad as DeJuan Harris and Fred Jackson were subbing in for Rawls when he went out of injury, it didn't matter. It just didn't matter. Wilson was creating regardless. Now, on the AFC side, I do like your pick for the Steelers, but I have to say that I'm actually on board with the New York Jets. And I know you mentioned the Jets earlier in the season when we talked about this, but Ryan Fitzpatrick has really turned around some great performances. Over the last three-game win streak, he has thrown for a combined, I mean, this is obscene when you think about it, but nine touchdowns in three games. I mean, this is Ryan Fitzpatrick, of all people. But he is keeping things short and contained when he needs to. He's going downfield when he needs to. He has a completion percentage that's over 62-63%. I mean, he's really being smart with the ball. And honestly, they have the most balanced attack that I've seen in most AFC teams. They have they are tied for 12th in passing yards, and they're tied for 12th in rushing yards per game. So they're doing a good job there, and their defense is solid. They're 10th overall with limiting points against them from opposing offenses. I really think that as long as and Revis is not Revis anymore, you know, he's not Revis Island, but as long as he gets back healthy and they play solid defense and they continue the way they're going, they really have good balance on both sides of the ball, and they have good balance in the air and on the ground. So I really do think the Jets do have a shot here at being a scary playoff team. So with
yeah,
that
I would
said,
agree on...
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I would agree on that. And, you know, you cited how I've been saying it all along, that I think the Jets are the scariest team out of the AFC, aside from the Patriots. With that said, mm-hmm. You know, they're on a nice little three-game win streak here, but they beat the Dolphins, the Giants, and the Titans. So they're going to have to, at some point, Ryan Fitzpatrick's going to have to prove he can beat a marquee team, because that's his MO. When he plays average or below average teams, he is a more than serviceable quarterback. It's in those big moments that he can't get past the second read, and he starts gunning balls in there where he shouldn't be, and the turnovers start coming, and that's when you see the real Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. There will be greater tests for him in the future. I do think they have found a good running combination, though, between Chris Ivory and Bilal Powell. I mean, those two were not really big names in any way. Powell, in particular, was somebody I didn't even think would be a contributor, but he's actually looked pretty good.
Yeah, I agree.
So moving right along to the next topic then, let's talk about the Atlanta Falcons, because at the beginning of the season, and we talked about this earlier on in earlier podcasts, they looked like the team to beat. They were 5-0, and then they just completely tanked. Now 6-7, they may not even make the playoffs. You know, what do you think about the Atlanta Falcons? Can they turn their season around? What can they do? Or is it time to just throw in the towel and start planning for 2016?
There's so many things to say about them. I mean, this, to start, it's you know, I think one of our biggest problems is that people sometimes lose their ability to analyze the team or players because of fantasy. And Matt Ryan may be a top five fantasy quarterback, but Matt Ryan is not any good. I think we said earlier this year, I think he was a second tier quarterback, and he's probably lower second tier, higher upper tier three at this point. He's not good when the pressure's on, and he makes too many mistakes, and he's just not. He doesn't have ice in his veins when he needs it. But delving into further than that, from a GM perspective, they've got to do something here. Someone needs to go into their office and let them know that Roddy White's been washed up for about 3 years. So you can't keep rolling into a season with him as your number two option. And they haven't replaced Gonzalez since he retired. So, you know, you really have an offense that's built around Julio Jones and then Devonta Freeman. And again, you know how much stock I put in a running back in the NFL. So when your second best offensive player is your running back, who was, you know, a question mark at most going into the season. You have some huge issues. And then secondly, or thirdly, I guess, you know, they still haven't addressed the issues on the defense. You know, still in the middle of the pack D. I was just looking up some numbers before we jumped on, and, you know, they're giving up 44% on third down conversions right now. The fact that they're 6-7 right now with giving up 44% on third downs is miraculous. This defense can't get off the field. And on top of that, as a team, they're at a -6 turnover ratio. So when you turn over the ball more than you should be, you only have one really viable option, you know, and a decent running back on offense, and you can't get off the field on third down. You know, all those years that, you know, 2011 when the Pats went to the Super Bowl and, you know, Troy Aikman was cited saying that that was the worst defense he'd ever seen go to the Super Bowl for, and everyone, you know, said, and I think it was the year before in 2010 that Bart Scott said that we couldn't stop a nosebleed. And that was all true about the Pats defense 09 through, I'd say, mid-2012 when we acquired Aqib Talib. But what we did do those years is that Pats defense turned over the ball. So even though they couldn't stop anybody and they were right around that 45% mark on third downs too, they were still one of the top teams in interceptions and fumble recoveries. And then you have Brady on the other side not turning it over. So if you can't stop anybody, you got to at least be, you know, opportunistic and make some plays sometimes. And they don't do either. So Atlanta is on a downslide that it's probably going to take a couple year rebuild here to get out of it. They're better off right now tanking to the bottom and going and getting a top flight receiver to match up Julio next year.
Right, and I totally agree with that analysis, but I have to say, one area that I might disagree a little bit on is that I think that the Falcons, really, in order to turn their season around, if it's even possible, because I don't know if that's even possible at this point, I think they have to recommit to their ground game, because honestly, if you look at what Devontae Freeman did and how and what the result was earlier in the season, in the four games they won while Freeman was the starting running back, and that's weeks 3, 4, 5, and 7, he averaged 24 carries per game and totaled 7 rushing touchdowns, and they were able to win those games. Sometimes not, you know, by a large margin, but they were able to win those games, and there wasn't a lot of there weren't a lot of issues there, and they looked like a championship or at least a challenging team, a team that could compete, a competitive team. In the two games he started recently, after coming back from injury, and I know part of this might be because of injury, he's averaged only 13 carries per game, no rushing touchdowns. They've lost horribly. They've lost particularly horribly to Carolina last weekend. I really do think that there's something that needs to be done here, because Matt Ryan, as you said, we talked about before, he's not a good quarterback. He needs time. He needs time to make smart decisions, and I think that having a solid ground game, a solid commitment to rushing the ball actually helps him. I think that when people don't feel like they have to worry about Devontae Freeman, Matt Ryan is terrible. And his second problem, he locks on to Julio Jones like nobody's business. If you look at the numbers so far this season, of the targets, okay, so he's had 520 targets, and 169 targets went to Julio Jones. Second was Jacob Tammy at 72, and then Devontae Freeman at 78. So he doesn't even have another receiver that he's targeted one-third as much as Julio Jones. Roddy White's down to 56. Leonard Hankerson, he hasn't even played in weeks, and he's not even on the he's actually a Patriot now. And and he has 45 targets. So, you know, you got to say that is a problem. If secondaries know that you're going to rush decisions and you're going to target the crap out of Julio Jones, then they're going to roll safety coverage towards Julio Jones. And they're not going to bother putting linebackers up against the line because they're not worried about you running the ball. So I think they got to commit to the run, and he's got to learn not to lock on to Julio. I mean, Julio Jones is their best athlete, but you can't just lock on to him. They need to find somebody else.
Yeah, I agree on that.
Okay. So I do agree with you. Roddy White has been washed up for a long time. But, you know, right now they don't have any better options. We thought it was Leonard Hankerson, but they let him go. I don't know why. Frankly, he looked better than Roddy White out there. I think it was kind of a steal, the Patriots picking him up after he was waived off IR. So I don't get it.
Julius Thomas and Hankerson and let Roddy White go, that offense would have been better suited this year because they'd had three viable real options. But when Hankerson's your number two guy, that's not good enough. That's not cutting it.
Right, and he wasn't even their number two guy. I mean, Jacob Tammy is fine.
Well, yeah.
But he's not. He shouldn't be your number two receiver. That's just doesn't make any sense. Okay, so let's turn to another team that's actually trending in the opposite direction, and that's the Philadelphia Eagles. At the beginning of the year, we all kind of said, well, the Eagles look like a dangerous team, and then they started playing, and they look like crap. Now they've turned it around. They're putting on a late push. Because the NFC East is so terrible, they have a shot at making the playoffs. So tell me, Ryan, what do you think? Philadelphia Eagles for real, or if they're late push in 2015, or is this just smoke and mirrors?
You know, I think they might have figured out a little something. I think a little personal pride woke up in them right around the 14-0 mark in New England when Belichick decided to run a drop kick on them and tried to embarrass them.
right.
You saw a team that kind of stood up and said, well, this isn't happening again. Because they'd been embarrassed off the field 2 weeks before that. Since that point, the last 2 weeks, I was actually pretty surprised. I was looking it up. They've only had 5 sacks over the last 2 weeks. But they've been pretty much unblockable. In the Pats game, it was something like 35% of the time Brady was either hurried, hit, knocked down, or sacked. And it was similar last week in Buffalo. You know, you had Richie Incognito coming out after the game, unlike his teammate there, Shady McCoy, and actually taking his medicine and saying that he got beat in that game. And he didn't. I think one of the Chip Kelly's biggest struggles so far has been garnering respect, and I think he's starting to do it. And I would urge him to actually push a little bit harder on this. But I think he started to get it. But you know, the fact that you have a player like McCoy still whining about being traded shows just how little authority that he really has over his players and respect he garners. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I keep ESPN is just because they pander to the star athletes. Just keeps letting McCoy go off. Something to tell LeSean McCoy that he plays in the NFL, people get traded. And so shut up and deal with it. It's been 9 months. It's like still crying over your high school girlfriend. It's over, bro. Move on. And Chip Kelly, what he should do, and I know he's kind of relegated to DeMarco Murray to fourth string. I would cut DeMarco Murray tomorrow and let the team know that you're held accountable, that he is the Iron Fist, and that he's not just some college coach and they're trying to pump up his guys and, you know, come in with gimmicks. Because I think that was a signing, much like I talked about Jimmy Graham, which is you kind of lose your identity. And he doesn't fit their identity. And so he shouldn't really be on the team. So if he did that, I would feel much better about their chances. But overall, I think that them and the Giants are the two most talented teams in the division. And the Giants just can't get out of their own way for the most part. So I don't trust the Giants to run the table. And I really think that the Eagles could run the table here and could eventually win that crap bag division.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what's going to happen actually is that last game against the Giants will probably be a play-in game for that division. I would be surprised if the Eagles can beat the Cardinals, and I would be surprised if the Giants can beat the Panthers. So with those two losing this week, I think that the Redskins probably are going to fall out of this race at some point. If nothing else, they'll probably lose to the Eagles at least in week 16, and then that last game will be a play-in game for them. Now, as far as the Eagles are concerned, you know, I have mixed feelings about this. I really think that Chip Kelly screwed up the entire running back thing. I think DeMarco Murray clearly was not a fit for his scheme at all. I think he felt a lot of pressure because he let LeSean McCoy go and thought he had to bring a big name in. He thought he had to make a big splash. He would have been better off spending that money elsewhere along the defense, perhaps, and just running with Ryan Matthews, who obviously is a better fit for that offense, and Darren Sproles. I think that would have been a much better use of the funds they have in order to build their team. Because quite frankly, Chip Kelly has always been a spread offense guy. He's always been a West Coast offense-oriented coach, and DeMarco Murray's not that type of player. He's just not, and anybody could see it. And I really think he kind of bowed to pressure when he brought him in. So with that said, I don't think the Eagles are going to make it into the playoffs. If they do, I think they'll be quickly eliminated. I think they have found out a few things. I'm shocked that they said they want to sign Bradford long term. I just don't see him as being the guy who can bring them to the next level. And quite frankly, I don't know if they have the right receivers there. I mean, Nelson Agholor caught his first touchdown of the season, but I've seen zero development from him throughout the length of the season. In fact, Riley Cooper looked better for most of the season, which is terrible, which is absolutely terrible. You know. So any last thoughts about the Eagles before we push on ourselves?
Yeah, I actually had them upsetting Arizona this weekend. I think that they could make a run for it. I don't believe in them long term. I think they'll easily be the sixth best team going into the playoffs on the NFC side. But I think Coughlin can work his magic here and there. I just don't see it this year for the Giants. So I think they end up winning out here and taking that division.
Wow. Okay. Well, that'll be very interesting to see what happens. This is going to be a big weekend for both teams playing two defensive juggernauts. So let's move on to the next topic, and that's the Denver Broncos, who are kind of treading water at this point. They've been playing a Brock Osweiler behind center the last couple of games. He started off being a decent game manager and has regressed dramatically in recent games. Peyton Manning now practicing. So the question is, should they turn back to Peyton Manning, or is it time to just stick it out with Brock Osweiler?
I mean, it's time to stick it out with Osweiler. I saw an interesting meme the other day. It was pretty funny. Dolphins spend, whatever it was, $40 million on Ndamukong Suh, $60 million on Ndamukong Suh. Jets spend $40 million on Darrell Revis, and the Bills trade for McCoy and bring in Rex Ryan, and we won our 13th division title in 15 years. Keep trying. The same can be said about the rest of the AFC. Even the Steelers, who I said are scary, and the reason why the Steelers are scary is because of the fact that they had that third receiver they can go to. But at the end of the day, it's going to be hard for any AFC team now, because now the road is going through Foxborough again. And I don't care if it's Peyton Manning with his new alarm or Brock Osweiler coming in here. Mm-hmm. The Broncos' only shot of really, I think, getting to the Super Bowl this year, provided the Pats don't get knocked off in the division round, was having home field advantage throughout. So I think you got to get Brock. Peyton Manning's not coming back next year. You can't go with him next year. And you're not going to, and I don't think you're going to win the Super Bowl this year. I think Brock gives you a better chance either way. But you're going to have a little bit of a long-term scope here. And do you really think that you're going to put Peyton in, you're going to plug him back in after this week and you're going to go on a real run here to the Super Bowl? Because I don't. So if I'm Denver, I'm riding the kid, kind of evaluating him and hopefully get at least one, if not two, playoff games under his belt and see how he looks under the bright lights in January. And if you have something, you have something. If not, then in the offseason, you got to kind of reevaluate and see what magic you can work to bring in somebody else.
Yeah, I'm going to have to say that at this point, Brock Osweiler has regressed so much in the last game and a half that I have really lost a lot of confidence in him. And I don't think it's a skill set issue. I really do think that he has the right skill set to be the quarterback for Denver Broncos in the future. I just don't think he has the football IQ. I mean, he was running scared against the Oakland Raiders. I mean, Khalil Mack sacked him five times and then hit him seven times on top of that. I mean, the guy, he's not a rookie, but he's holding on to the ball too long, and that's a rookie mistake. And I think that it's going to take some time for him to get back into it, and I think he's starting to bend under the pressure. I think it's time to tell Osweiler he's the guy of the future. But listen, Peyton Manning is Peyton Manning. I'm not a Peyton Manning apologist. I'm not going to look at his numbers in 2015. If he's healthy, and that's a big if, because if he's not healthy, then there's no contest. You stick with Osweiler. But if he's healthy, if he's 100% healthy, then I think you got to go with Peyton Manning and see what happens. I mean, he still has the football IQ. And if he's good to go, then the ship should rise or fall in his performance. He has playoff experience, and you'll see where it goes. Now, I agree with you. I don't think the Broncos are going to make it to the Super Bowl. I think they're going to get knocked out. And I like the idea of evaluating Osweiler, but that management is going to take such a hit if they put Osweiler in and they get blown out in the playoffs. If they put in Peyton Manning and they get blown out in the playoffs, no one's going to care. No one's going to care. They're going to and Peyton Manning will ride off into the sunset, and that'll be the end of that. And Osweiler gets a nice fresh start next year without the stigma of blowing a playoff performance. So I'm thinking forward to next year, too. I'm thinking of using Peyton Manning as the scapegoat if he can't come back, and then I'm going to just put that 5% chance that he's able to get some of that Peyton Manning magic back and give them a little bit of a run. But I agree. Ultimately, they're going to lose.
Yeah, unless he can throw the deep ball, though, I think the biggest issue, and I think people are starting to realize this, and I've been saying it for years, that Demaryius Thomas is soft. So unless you can throw him the deep ball and you have a run-and-gun-sling offense like they did in 2013, I mean, he's useless. He won't go over the middle. He short arms every ball. I mean, all you have to do is go back, and it got lost in the shuffle because of the great comeback the Broncos had against the Patriots. So go back and watch that game. Logan Ryan was shutting him down, and all he was doing was pouting. And every time he went over the middle, he was alligator-arming every ball. So you only have really one weapon now if Peyton's in there, because Peyton can only throw it so far now. You know, so I think Peyton able to give you, you know, at least more from a mental perspective, give you more than Osweiler. But you're better off just sending Demaryius down the sideline on fly routes all day and hoping Osweiler can hit him a couple times and then relying on Emmanuel Sanders underneath than having Peyton go out there, because Peyton can't hit him long, and Demaryius has no interest going anywhere near a linebacker with the ball in the air.
Yeah, I think that I can agree with that part of it, but I think that ultimately they're going to lose no matter what, whether they play Osweiler or Peyton Manning. So, you know, from a perspective of what's going to set up Osweiler to be the guy next year, now I almost feel like let's give him a clean slate next year. Let's not saddle him with a bad playoff loss. Now, and I'm not saying I don't have confidence that he might be able to pull it off. I just think that there's no chance that if Brock Osweiler is leading the Broncos that they're going to win in the playoffs. And they probably won't win with Peyton Manning either. But if he loses with Peyton Manning, that's the end of that. Osweiler gets a fresh start next year. If you want a window, Osweiler is the guy. But I just don't think
they're
going to win.
The only scapegoat you're going to need is when they have to put a cue to leave on Antonio Brown, and Antonio's running all over the field all day. Typical of every January, Tlaib will pull a hamstring and he'll be set on the side on the last half of the game, and that, you know, you can point the finger there.
Right. Well, always good to have scapegoats. That's always good. All right, one last question. I'm just gonna roll this one out there because it's really interesting to me, and we already talked about the Seahawks, but Thomas Rawls steps in, is amazing, and now he's out for the season. Terrible luck, but doesn't seem to matter. But then they have DeJuan Harris step in. Looked mediocre. And they had Fred Jackson there. Looked mediocre. We thought DeJuan Harris was going to be the guy. He's been released as of yesterday. Bryce Brown was picked up before that. We thought Bryce Brown was the guy. Now they picked up Christine Michael, who they cut earlier in the year and who's been cut by three teams this year. Let me ask you this. Does it matter who's at running back in Seattle?
Doesn't matter who's at running back anywhere. The last team to win with the running back as their you know, their number one asset was the Seahawks in 2013. But even that, their defense is great, and Russell Wilson made enough plays. But, you know, you look at 2012, Joe Flacco had an unbelievable postseason run. You know, and aside from that, you usually have guys like Rodgers, Breeze, Manning, Roethlisberger, Brady. You know, that's how you win a Super Bowl, is having a number one wide receiver. I mean, well, Garrett Blunt was the starting running back for the New England Patriots last year in the Super Bowl team. So, you know,
I give that credit. That's credit I give to Belichick, though. I say that's the product of Belichick's planning, not really the fact that you don't need a running back. He just knows how to get the best out of whatever player he's
picking. I'm just saying, you get Jonas Gray coming in Indianapolis, run for 200 yards. He's on a practice squad right now. So, you know, you usually find guys out of the woodwork that, you know, you look at Justin Forsett was a nobody, and Ray Rice, you know, has his incident, goes away, and Forsett's in there, runs the ball. So, you know, the teams that run the ball usually run the ball well because they have a good passing attack and they have a good offensive line. So I think whoever the Seahawks put back there, they'll be fine as long as Russell Wilson's throwing the ball all over the yard like he is right now. You know, I it would be crazy, but I could honestly see them in the Patriots in a rematch this year in the Super Bowl at this point.
Right. So how do you feel about Steven Jackson? The word on the street is Steven Jackson is talking to the Patriots today. You like him? Don't like him?
Yeah. You know, he's not the same guy he used to be. I would be less fearful of him than Monty Ball. I think Monty Ball's got a better upside, but you know, much higher fumbling rate. But, you know, hopefully we can just get Hot Fingers Jimmy in the locker room there taking a little air out of the ball. So Monte can hold on to it this year.
Yeah, right. Well, I think Bolden and White is all you need. Trust me. I just think that it doesn't matter what the names are on the back of those running backs. Belichick will make them good. So that's the end of the that's all we got for today. We're running out of time. So, Ryan, give us your Twitter handle so people can follow you.
Yes, at Ryan Whitfield NE.
All right, and you can follow us at FB Garbage Time. And until next week, enjoy the rest of the NFL week.